The following presentation was recorded at the Buddhist Society of Victoria, Malvern East, Australia. Please visit our website at bsv.net.au.
So if we just like to close our eyes and try and bring our awareness to the present moment, just relax into the knowing, letting go of our memories, our past experiences, maybe we have some expectations or thoughts about some other moment other than just the now. So we can just ignore them and be with whatever feelings we have. Maybe there's some thinking, some proliferation. So we can just accept the feelings, the experience we're having, without any aversion, without any craving, and just try and maintain this state of awareness called mindfulness. So it's good to remember when we are doing meditation that we have what are called the five hindrances coming up sometimes. They are sensual desire, kamachanda, bhayapada, ill will, udacha, kukucha, restlessness, worry, vichikicha, doubt, and tinamida, sleepiness, and torpor. So when we notice maybe a thought of sensual desire or maybe some worry or some other unwholesome mind state, we have to apply certain antidotes, certain things, so our mind state can change back to being wholesome or being neutral. So if we are proliferating about some sensual experience, we can think of its opposite. So we can think of maybe our mortality, the day we die, all these experiences we crave for will no longer be able to satisfy us. We can think of the danger of having a mind subject to sensual desire. They provide little gratification and they involve much suffering. So we have to try and induce this state of letting go by using right thinking. So if we can keep our mind wholesome, if we can keep our mind in a state where it's not afflicted by the five hindrances, then we are practicing right intention. So right intention involves three things. Primarily, they are the intention to renounce, the intention of non-harming, and the intention of non-ill will. So right now, we are renouncing wrong action and wrong view, wrong intention by keeping our mind pacified, keeping our mind in a sphere of non-greed, non-hatred, and non-delusion. So we are not paying attention to things that stimulate desire and craving. We are not paying attention to things that stimulate aversion. We are not wishing harm on anyone. So we are practicing right intention. And likewise, we are practicing right speech. We are not speaking things that are harsh. We are not speaking things that are untruthful. We are not speaking things that are meaningless. So right mindfulness is kaya, body, vedana, feeling, mind, and mind objects. So if we can keep our awareness with these four things for this duration of time, then we are possessed of right mindfulness. So right effort, the other path factor we have to remember, involves restraining our body, speech, and mind. So we are not expressing agitation, we are not expressing delight in things that bring us suffering, we are not expressing interest in external things. So this is Sangvara Padana. The intention or the effort to restrain. So the five hindrances, they come through our perception, primarily our perception of things. So we are trying to abandon unwholesome mind states, we are trying to abandon greed, hatred, and delusion. And if we perceive something as being desirable, then it will form as an intention and then an action, and then for us, another experience of craving, dissatisfaction, and suffering. So we are not allowing our mind to go in that direction. That is right effort. So the second right effort is the right effort to abandon or let go. So we are trying to let go of our wrong thinking, our wrong intentions, our non-experience of samadhi, and experience more samadhi by letting go of distraction, letting go of clinging, holding on to meaningless external things. The conditioned world, in brief, so we are practicing together with the intention to restrain, the intention to let go. So if we can keep this state going as much as we can by restraining our eye faculty, our ear faculty, our nose faculty, our faculty of touch, and our faculty of thought, then at the end of the session we will have a heightened sense of samadhi. So I'm just going to keep talking, and if your meditation is going well, please keep going. There's no need to stop, just to open your eyes. If you can feel the samadhi a bit increasing, then just keep going as we're going, and I'll just start talking as per normal. So over the quick period of the rains retreat, maybe, hopefully we have maybe done something a bit different in our Buddhist practice as per what would be helpful for us in this period, even though we are not living in the monastery, like the monks are staying 3 months, not going anywhere in this period. There are certain times of the year maybe where we can try and do more things that normally we wouldn't do. For example, for 3 months maybe we can try and abstain from some activity which we normally are doing too much of, maybe too much socializing, maybe not enough study, maybe not enough going to the monastery, whichever monastery we like the most. So we can try and, in the period of this rains retreat, do a bit more of what's called brahmacharya. So maybe we are not quite at the stage where we are interested in monastic life, or maybe staying in a monastery is a bit challenging for us. So one day and one night, 4 times a month, is what is normally recommended for lay people who are trying to increase their experience of what's called samadhi sukha. So the Buddha talked about 2 kinds of happiness. He talked about the happiness of sensuality, the happiness of meditation. So sensuality is very easy happiness, in the sense of, you know, we can just call our friend, we can go out for coffee, or we can go see a film or do something external, and we feel some degree of happiness. So the Buddha encouraged us to see the danger in these things rather than just following them without thinking twice about, we've been maybe practicing Buddhism for such and such a period of time and still samadhi is not arising. So the experience of samadhi is something we should all be aiming for in our Buddhist practice. So pamoja, piti, sukha, all these words, they are an experience you can't fabricate. I mean, you can think you're having it and you're not, but it comes naturally to us when we experience the Eightfold Path producing right concentration. So these factors I mentioned, right view, right intention, right speech, right action, right livelihood, we have to know them off by heart. So if you can't remember them from memory, it means that we are lacking in our ability to practice right mindfulness, right effort, so samadhi will not come to us. So Ajahn Chah used to say, you don't have to go looking for samadhi, it will come to you. So sometimes people think, oh, if I study Buddhism in this tradition or with this teacher or go on this retreat or do this technique, then that will do it for me. That will be what I need the most. So if we think about the process of how we experience samadhi, we have to go through kaya viveka, seclusion of the body, citta viveka, seclusion of the mind. So seclusion is like a bit maybe something we're not so familiar with. So we tend to just function based on sankhara. So we have like vachi sankhara, verbalization. So we talk without thinking, actually, is this really necessary for me to say? So right speech, this factor of not saying things that are unnecessary or saying things that are not really helpful or not really beneficial, is an area we can increase our mindfulness. So when we don't talk a lot, we have a better state of a more wholesome mind state arising directly from that. So we kind of tend to think a lot, we tend to speak a lot, and so this phenomenon of maybe sometimes we experience worry, maybe sometimes we experience discontent, we can trace it back to the topic of our conversation as an area we can maybe try and practice more right speech. So in lay life, we are in a situation where, you know, you meet people and then you're just naturally, when you meet people, you talk. And then so sometimes we tend to get caught in this cycle of we are creating attachment and clinging just from speaking. So maybe we think normally actually, you know, you kind of have attachment to things. So you have attachment to your house, you have attachment to your wealth, we have attachment to people, where we come from, all these kinds of things as like coarse forms of the things we hold on to that cause our suffering. But also it's actually like what we talk about and how we see things is maybe a deeper level that we can work on. So we can think, okay, what is necessary? What do I really need in my life, or what do I really need right now to increase my samadhi? So we can answer that based on our experience. So as we practice samadhi and we practice right mindfulness, can we see how it works yet and how it doesn't work? So sometimes we lose mindfulness. Are we aware when we lose mindfulness? So sometimes we're driving, maybe we turn on the radio, like I was with some lay people the other day, and you get in the car and then you turn on the radio and then the mind is already distracted a little bit. And we were driving in the city and the individual forgot that in Melbourne you can't overtake trams because then you could possibly run over someone. So if you're lacking in mindfulness a little bit and you're not paying attention to which state you're in or where you are, then it can very easily turn into a situation where you maybe accidentally kill someone. So the intention to just hear something, like you want to hear the radio while you're driving, can create for you a potentially very undesirable outcome. So recently in the monastery I've been staying, there was a lay supporter of the monastery. I think he was driving to work in the morning, and it was just by sheer coincidence that he was hit by an oncoming car. But maybe it was the case that the mindfulness at that point in time was maybe not quite in the present moment. Maybe we just for a split second we think about something. So when we're driving, if we are constantly mindful of the present moment, then that's the obviously most sure way of warding off danger for us. So we normally don't think too much about this thing the Buddha talked about, adinavasanya, the perception of danger as being part of our life, because we are living in a nice country, we are relatively well off, we are not suffering really from maybe coarse experiences that other people can have, to do with not having a house, not having money, not having health insurance. So we have to change the way we perceive things so that this perception comes up, this perception of seeing the danger. Because time will eventually run out and we will maybe pass away with a minimal level of citta bhavana, mental development. So the impetus, the cause for our motivation to maybe keep the eight precepts, to spend more time in monasteries, is not quite there. So if we think about the Buddha's simile of the burning house, like if we think about life is suffering, birth is suffering, aging is suffering, death is suffering, we are kind of running around in samsara, coming back to this phenomenon again and again, and we haven't been able to get over the idea that life is happiness. So once we get that idea into our mind, then life, the experience of happiness will change. So we have more samadhi happiness, because life, the happiness of what is just mundane life, we have let go of. So we know we don't have this intention in our mind to kind of look for more experiences and look for more external things to make us happy. We can just finally put it down. on a level of intention. So we like look for things because of our intention. We don't have the intention to renounce sensual desire because we still have the intention of sensual desire. So when it becomes suffering, like when sensual desire becomes suffering, then that's the end of wrong intention for the period of however long we are still practicing Dhamma. This intention, this kind of like battle between right intention and wrong intention is for us, we are now able to control our path factors. So sometimes we are lacking the ability to kind of, okay, we have wrong intention coming into our mind, we can't resist it. So we are falling victim to sensual desire again and again. So we have to develop power, we have to develop strength. So the Buddha talked about the five powers. Saddha, faith, virya, effort, samadhi, concentration, sati, mindfulness, panya, wisdom. So these five powers are what overcomes sensual desire, ill will, restlessness, worry, and doubt. So when we have doubt, like if I go to the monastery today, you know, like we start to doubt. Or if I do, you know, we have some idea of maybe doing something wholesome and then we have doubt arising. So we can't execute our plan. If we want to use like Achan Jeff style language, we have like a plan and we're trying to execute the game plan. So the game plan is to attain wholesome states and overcome our mental hindrances. So there are skillful means that we employ. Like today we started, there was an announcement about certain activities coming up to do with a discussion group, to do with doing some service for the Buddhist center. So this is good, but it's not quite a path factor for us, because ideally we would know for ourselves and have our own game plan on a personal level. Like we know for us, it's good to have Dhamma discussion with Kalyanamitta, so we kind of do it just by virtue of our right view and right intention. So in this day and age, we have social media, we have lots of different avenues we can practice Dhamma Sakaccha, but maybe we are still not quite there in, maybe we open social media, but we don't see good Facebook pages, maybe we don't see kind of like, we don't interact with superior people in the sense of, we know, okay, if I have an interaction with this person, it will be beneficial for my satipanya, my mindfulness and wisdom. So we are perhaps not clearly perceiving which is a person we should develop more of a closer interaction with. So this fault of non-association is a very common thing, I think, for lay people, because we are caught in this cycle of not seeing. So mindfulness is considered, talked about as being memory, but you can also think of it as being like the sense of vipassana, seeing things clearly. So maybe we have some contact with the monastics, or we come to the BSV, but we don't really interact with them, or we don't really know them. It's because we are not practicing association. We are kind of getting caught in the cycle of, okay, wisdom is something, you know, we have to cultivate. So when you meet people and you have maybe some questions in your mind, or there's some aspect of Buddhist practice that, you know, we can try and make clear, it comes through association, I think, more than people just reading or people listening and passively kind of learning. So there has to be, I think, a higher degree of interaction for there to be success. So monastic life, if you've ever been to monasteries or maybe you've had some interaction with the monastics, I think the primary difference between the two groups is that every day we are interacting, like we interact with sangha members ourselves, we interact with each other, senior sangha members, we interact with the junior sangha members. So we are kind of like in a cauldron where we are making our defilements evaporate by close association. So if we do something wrong, like, you know, someone will tell us, if we make a mistake or there's some aspect where there's deficiency, we will definitely hear about it. Whereas in lay life, I think maybe we prefer not to know, because maybe we are attached to being right. Or maybe we don't like hearing criticism, or maybe we are not so ready for letting go of our cup being full. Like Ajahn Chah used to have this simile of the, we have to kind of let go of our wrong view and wrong intention, like you would empty out a cup. So something new can go in once the old material is gone. So I was last year, 2018, I think, just when Newbury was starting out. And you, some of you may remember me, some of you maybe have not met me before. So it's nice to be back at the BSV, and maybe over the next 2 days I will get to have an interaction with you personally. But today I thought to make the session two times, so after the meal we can have another session where we do chanting, and maybe I can show some slides about where I've been living in India, and maybe we can have a Q&A. And so for us also as lay people, maybe the last part of the Dhamma talk, I can talk a bit about dana, generosity. So the Buddha talked about different levels of generosity. We can practice different things. How we practice generosity depends on maybe our ability to bring to mind the qualities the Buddha talked about when he talked about generosity. So there's a list, a good list in the Pali Canon, in the book of the numerical discourses, called the Sapurisa Dana list. So the qualities of a wise person, the generous qualities of a wise person. So generosity is a good and easy way to make our mind wholesome. So when we practice generosity, hopefully we can see that. It's a easy way, a quick way to eradicate stinginess, attachment, greed in our mind. When we give things, we give our time, we give material objects, we give our livelihood, like parts of our livelihood, we donate charity to different organizations, to Buddhist centers, that kind of thing. So the easiest form of generosity is offering food and drink, because in this kind of situation in Melbourne, in Victoria, oftentimes it's not difficult to find food and drink. And so maybe on a Sunday morning, we go to a Buddhist center and there's a monastic there. The Buddha encourages us to practice vicheya deti, which means to give after discrimination. So it depends on the individual what we would give to them, this quality of vicheya deti. So certain people maybe have the habit of drinking green tea, maybe black tea, maybe coffee. So these things, they are the ability, when we know them, we increase our ability to give pleasing things. So to give a pleasing gift is also discussed in the Anguttara Nikaya and the Manapadayi Sutta, where the Buddha talked about giving that which is pleasing, we gain the agreeable. So when someone gives you something that is useful, that's just what you need, then it is mindfulness and clear comprehension coming into effect for us. So knowing the right time, we can make offerings in the morning. We can offer any type of food and drink. We can, you know, give anything, but we would ideally give with discrimination. So sometimes there are health issues. People, monastics have health issues. So we have to kind of understand the condition of that person so that we can give a gift to them which is beneficial based on their condition. So vicheya deti, panitandeti, giving things that are excellent. So there's seven qualities. Panitang, excellent. Vicheya, after investigation. Abhinang, frequently. Giving things that are allowable. Giving things at the right time. So knowing the right time, knowing what to give, giving frequently, they all increase our kusala citta, our wholesome mind state. So when we, the more frequently we do generosity, the ability or the susceptibility of our mind towards stinginess and attachment will gradually cease. because we are so accustomed to giving, letting go, that we are, our mind cannot think of holding on as being something that's desirable. So this is a very nice idea. If you think about what can happen when we are not practicing generosity, we are becoming enveloped by clinging and craving, and it becomes such a strong habit that we can't get out of it. So we have maybe attachment to material things. Maybe we have two cars. Maybe we have, you know, kind of too much stuff. And so we are not kind of like thinking clearly about, and maybe we should change the paradigm to let's get rid of our stuff or more of our stuff. Let's try and do more generosity if we can, so that we are, our mind is constantly wholesome. So maybe we're like, our mind is wholesome for a brief period, and then we go back, we fall back into unwholesomeness. So samadhi, generosity, these qualities, mindfulness, right thinking, are all things that hopefully for us, we are constantly reminding ourselves, and maybe through discussion, we are clarifying how we can do them or what ways we can possibly do them, so that our dana, sila bhavana, is getting better. So there's three types of categories of people the Buddha talked about. We can be someone who is visesa, getting better, titta, staying the same, or hina, getting worse. So if we are titta, we are staying the same, then our level of generosity, our precepts, our samadhi, it's the same now as it was last year. So we would ideally be going from maybe just doing the same type of practice to getting better by practicing this Sapurusa Dhamma list. So there's seven qualities of a generous person. There's a list, another list, which is also a seven. I'll just mention it briefly. That involves knowing the method, knowing the goal. That's the first two. So knowing the method and the goal, like the method of mindfulness, the goal of samadhi, the goal of wholesome mind states, the method is maybe generosity, the method is letting go, right effort. So we know a bit about that. Knowing oneself, atanyu, knowing our weaknesses, our strengths, what areas we can maybe work on. So we know ourselves, maybe we have a tendency towards a certain type of defilement, and so we are aware of it, is the meaning of knowing oneself. So we can kind of work with it a bit more than just not knowing it. Kalanyu, that's the next quality, knowing the right time. So when we are at the Buddhist center, we know the right time, that in the sense of hopefully we know that Dhamma Sakaccha is said to be a great blessing. So we are hopefully looking for an opportunity to practice Dhamma Sakaccha. Rather than talking about worldly things all the time, we can, based on our study and our bit of experience in practicing, use it to practice right discussion or right speech with maybe the Dhamma speaker, whoever that is. Knowing the right time, knowing oneself, knowing the method, knowing the goal, knowing people, knowing groups of people. So when we are associating with people, we kind of have to to some degree be flexible and adapt. But we are also maybe hopefully perceiving when there's an opportunity. When we are with certain groups of people, there's different opportunities. So when we are like with the Buddhist friends, like in a Buddhist center, maybe the way we hopefully conduct or relate to this phenomena of actions of body, speech and mind is a bit different. So we can increase our kusala kamapata, our attainment of wholesome states, by knowing that, okay, in a Buddhist center, everyone is trying to practice mindfulness, so we don't have to talk a lot. We can just do our activities and practice samadhi in a mundane sense, and we don't have to verbalize so much. This is a nice thing, actually, I think. If you think about all the things that you could like about a Buddhist center or a Buddhist monastery, is that we don't have to talk a lot because we maybe have already defined roles, or we're on the committee, or we have some kind of some function already. So rather than kind of always talking and always asking questions and always verbalizing what we think, we can get beyond verbalization. So knowing groups of people, knowing individuals. So if we know individuals, it can mean that maybe we are familiar with what do forest monks do, or how do they operate, or how do forest monasteries operate. So the kind of like paradigm for them or us is to us hopefully familiar, in the sense of we maybe know how to behave and how to create merit for ourselves based on our ability to interact in a way that is sapurusa, superior or wise. So I'd just like to express my gratitude to everyone for coming today, and hopefully I can catch up with you maybe after the meal or some other period. So if everyone would just like to put their hands in Anjali, we can say sadhu together. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
Thank you, Bhante. Sorry, thank you, Bhante. Would you like to take questions from the floor and now? Or
yeah, if
later?
People want to ask questions now, it's fine, or we can do it after is also fine. If you have something more personal on another occasion afterwards, it's fine.
10:25, 10:20. Yeah, thanks, Bhante. Just had a question. You know, now we have this digital reality.
Yes.
Where metaverse, where you can create your own beings and digital avatars and, you know, stuff like that, who you interact with.
Mm-hmm.
What are your views on this? And is this good or bad? Because it's taking, especially the younger generation is really getting into it.
Yes.
With metaverse and all. So do you think it's good? Do you think it's bad?
Okay, good question. Well, I think to some degree, telecommunications is helpful. So you have like an identity, you're a layperson, you live in Australia, you have friends in some other country and you want to keep in touch. And so an avatar in the sense of you make a picture of yourself, you know, it's kind of fun. You change, you can change the color of your hair and you kind of like can have fun with your identity, because we are trying to let go of attachment to who we are. So some people are very like adamant about I am this person. So maybe you could think of it as being possibly a way to lessen, or you know, like reduce the attachment to the idea of identity. But on the other hand, we can also fall into the habit of we are creating an identity that is not really there. So maybe as a young person, we are struggling with some issue about who we are, and so rather than engaging with it in an interpersonal way, I think definitely there is a sense of we are losing this element of association. So I was talking about, we kind of like, instead of associating directly with someone, we use a phone. So I was just thinking that the other day, actually, that it would be so much nicer if we could sometimes not have to do that. So I guess as a parent, maybe we have to kind of like find the balance between, okay, when is it necessary to use a phone? When is it better to do things in person? So I think generally speaking, it's always better, if possible, to do things in person. And, you know, if you have an identity online and you use it for your work, or maybe, you know, you're using it just for in a benign social way, I don't think it's really a problem. But if you're using it in a way that is creating for yourself maybe something that is not skillful, not helpful for you, then that's for us to maybe think twice and say, actually, this avatar world is very much bound up with things that are maybe not skillful and not helpful for us. So, you know, we can fall into deception, we can fall into, you know, not really being honest, because we are trying to maybe create an image for the world to see, which it would be better if maybe we didn't have.
Is there an online question, Mark?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Bhante. So we do have a question online regarding the meditations on the parts of the body. why are the eyes not in the 32 parts of the body?
I think it's just a coincidence of time. So for whatever reason, when the list was compiled, you know, there were these lists of body parts. It wasn't like a classically correct list of all the anatomical parts of the body. So people who study medicine, maybe it seems like a bit strange that the eyes are not mentioned. But the idea is that we perceive the body in a way that is not desirable. So why look at the eye? Why look at the nails of your, you know, like why look at any part of the, any body parts? It's so that we don't perceive it as being desirable. So in the past, I had shown Asubi images in this center and people didn't like it. So Adrian asked me not to show it again. So maybe after the meal, I'll show it to you again. And, you know, like it's a challenging practice because we are, you know, like it's a bit this thing where, okay, if you just think about a body part like hair of the head, it's not really the same thing as, you know, you pick up your hair in the sink or in the toilet. It's like really disgusting when you touch certain body parts. So it's like when you see the body in its form as maybe there was an accident, maybe, you know, someone who had some kind of deformity, it's like the perception completely changes from, you know, it's just like nothing in particular. It's like very, very undesirable to see the human body in that way. So the problem with the 32 parts is that it's not quite, it doesn't quite hit you in the guts. So your asubha is meant to hit you in the guts if it's good asubha, or, you know, like, so Adrian is lining up to do that, so.
Is there any more questions in the room? No. So take another question online if you want, Bhante. Just a moment. In the rains retreat, for how many hours do the monks stay together in a hall per day? Can they just be in their kutis individually? And how do you deal with the boredom of being locked up?
Locked up, yes. Well, it depends on the monastery. The schedules tend to vary from place to place. But I think it would be a minimum, like there would be a morning sit, an afternoon sit, and an evening sit. So duration maybe 1 hour, 1 hour and a half of a group sitting. And then, you know, you have activities where you are doing some mundane thing like cleaning, or maybe there's some Vinaya class, or maybe there's some Sutta class. So it really depends on the schedule of the monastery. So if you're interested in staying in a monastery as a layperson, you're worried about, you know, how do you deal with the boredom, then I'd suggest just go and try and see what places work for you and what places don't. So certain schedules maybe are better for you, that are more, there's more activity. So then you can adjust, you can, you know, choose the right place is part of the Visuddhimagga discussion about what's called sapaya, so the supporting conditions. There are seven. So the climate, the people, the food, the place, these are all things that can kind of help us, or they can be very challenging. So for whatever reason, maybe we like cold climates, so we should try and pick a place where maybe that's got cold climate. So that kind of thing. So some places there's a lot of sutta discussion, some places not so much. So it's just up to you to try and find a place that's the right place for you.
We could take another question online if you want, Bhante. Yeah.
Bhante, maybe just to define what you mean by asubha. Some people may not know.
Okay, so subha means beautiful. Asubha means unbeautiful. So if you like, you know, like everyone likes nice things, everyone likes beautiful things. So we try and get rid of that perception and we replace it with thinking of things as being unbeautiful. So the four distorted perceptions, maybe you've heard of them. The distorted perception of seeing the impermanent as permanent, seeing the not self as self, seeing unsatisfactory as satisfactory, and seeing the unbeautiful as the beautiful. So we are trying to do the opposite. See unsatisfactoriness, see impermanence, see not self, see the unbeautiful.
B- Bhante, perhaps can you be a bit more explicit? I know, but a suba, what sort of things would
okay,
be involved
so
in a suba?
Different traditions emphasize it differently. So in the forest tradition, most monasteries have an asuba database. So you have like in the Satipatthana Sutta, you know, there's a discussion about charnel ground contemplations and bloated corpses and these kinds of things. So when we have sense desire, what are we desiring? It's primarily the physical experience of something. So a lot of the Thai forest traditions talk about body contemplation as a way to become an anagami. So if you can't see your body is unsatisfactory, there's no way you're going to be able to let go of sense desire because our senses are a part of our body. So we are contemplating our bodies, our own bodies as being like bloated and, you know, oozing all this foul matter and like in a very extreme way so that we can dislodge sense desire from our mind. So if to me, my experience of it has been that if it's extreme, it's better. Because the mind is conditioned to having, you know, like oftentimes a lot of sense desire. So if you create in your mind, you can remember some image that you can bring up when you have sense desire and when you have heedlessness arising, you can use it to get rid of the hindrance. So that's what it's for. It's like an antidote to the first hindrance.
So we have, I think, time for one more question.
Okay.
So this is from another Bhante, actually. So this is from Bhante Varapanya. Hello, Venerable. I am also a Buddhist monk and a meditation teacher with a YouTube channel and many followers. Can you give advice on what is the main teaching we should emphasize for people new to Buddhism?
Hi, Ajahn, yes, I remember you. So the new person, I would say that, like, we should start talking about this list that I mentioned, the Saparisa Dhammas, from the beginning, because I think we are trying to get there. So the more you talk about it, the more people can remember what it is. So oftentimes, you know, you hear something and then you forget about it, or, you know, you have some kind of medium where you are interacting with people, but the phenomena where we are interacting, like in a monastery day to day, I think is the missing link. So even if you just mention a list briefly, like you talk about the five powers, you talk about the Sata Bhojanga, but you kind of like mention it again and again. So each talk, there is maybe a list that you mention briefly so that people can get from the interaction this also perception. Oh, there's the five powers. Oh, yes, I remember one of the five powers is mindfulness. So they can remember part of the list and over time it will become more of a complete thing. So I would say just try and include in your Dhamma Desanas lists of dhammas that are important for everyone to remember, to do with path factors, to do with dana sila bhavana, to do with the idea of making merit, so that kind of thing.